Welcome, listeners of KGBM Bozeman 95.9, to another edition of The View From Here. I'm Steve Kirchhoff. Together today with co-host Jeff Milchen, we welcome Gallatin County Commissioner Scott McFarlane to The View From Here. Welcome, Scott.
Yeah, thank you.
Scott, the former facilities director for Belgrade Public Schools, first joined politics when he served as a trustee for the Montfortin School Board, a Democrat. Stop me if I'm wrong.
Yep.
A Democrat, Scott was then elected in the fall of 2018 to his first six-year term on the Gallatin County Commission. He earned his position by defeating longtime conservative county commissioner Steve White in an upset. The Gallatin County Commission oversees a host of government functions critical to the safety and welfare of over 115,000 county residents. Among the many responsibilities of the county commission are maintaining a sheriff's department, a jail, district courts, county attorneys, parks and fairgrounds. The county commission oversees these and other departments, including those providing social services, while also maintaining bridges and roads across the county. And, very significantly, the county reviews and approves all new subdivision and development proposals on unincorporated lands in Gallatin County. In short, the job of a county commissioner is big and multifaceted. Scott, a native of eastern Montana, Colstrip, and an MSU alum, joined the Gallatin County Commission on purpose. We have invited Scott to understand more about his job, his personal goals as a commissioner, and to better comprehend how citizens, our listeners, can interact with the county commission and make their voices heard. So anyway, Scott, welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
Anything that you want to correct that I've said so far?
Well, the on-purpose thing did make me think a second. You know, you can put a lot of effort into doing something, and when it happens, it still feels like an accident.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only out of the county duties, the only thing that I think there that is helpful for people that's a large one is the City County Health Department, too. That's a big employer, mm-hmm. big community effect. You know, there's a lot of other smaller concerns like weed boards and things like that, but the City County Health Department is a big player in our community.
Yeah.
And what are some of the activities and roles that go on within the health department? I think that's one relatively few people are really familiar with.
Yeah, the health officer, Matt Kelly, who heads that department, has a real disparate set of expectations of that office, right? We have the Environmental Services office, which is works very closely hand-in-hand with Planning Department about helping people site and comply with septic drain field issues and health life safety stuff. But then we also have a clinic, you know, we do immunizations. And then we also have like social benefit program offices like WIC that are doing women, infants, and children benefit type stuff. And then we also have other out in the community kind of social program motivators like chronic disease prevention office. They manage like the tobacco fund money and chronic disease prevention stuff, like making sure people are getting their cancer screenings. And they're also, that office is also a pretty big liaison to the Hispanic community because they have trouble kind of accessing government services. So we have some multilingual people in there that are helping that community stay in touch with social services.
Scott, when you say trouble accessing, is that because of lack of bilingual materials, or what factors go into that?
And also hesitancy, right? We have a lot of, I think in our communities in West Yellowstone and Big Sky, a lot of our service community that are Hispanic and Spanish-speaking also just have a hesitancy of accessing government services because of their desire to just kind of stay away from the government. So having kind of a friendly, forward, postured front to the health department that helps to help to feel those people feel that it's safe to come access services from the county is great. And I think that has seen a lot of success too.
Does the county have any formal or informal census numbers for Hispanic members of our population?
Not that I know of. There may be some people at the health department that would be grumbling right now that I don't know what that is because they maybe do, but I think that everybody would agree, even the people that have some numbers would agree that they're not likely very accurate. And that's a big push with the complete census committee that we're cooperating with the city over right now, is identifying those populations and how we can motivate them to participate with the census, because we really need to know those numbers. It's pretty critical.
Right.
Yeah.
So where would that outreach be done to reach the Hispanic community most effectively?
Yeah, most of that's going to be in Big Sky and West Yellowstone. That's where most of that community is. And we're already coming up with plans for how we make inroads into that community and use people from that community to help carry the message in that, you know, that nobody's going to come get you because you fill out the census form and please fill it out accurately. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that we've had some national conversations that seem to be kind of postured to demotivate people to be honest with their census or to even cooperate with the census from those communities. And we just have to counteract that sentiment, mm-hmm. which is a big job, but it's still a small community. We're still
a relatively small county. And you have staff devoted to that or staff people?
Several, yeah. Mm-hmm. When we jumped in with, the city had started their complete count committee through motivation from the state. Since they already had one running, we opted to just jump on with them, and they invited us on. So we've brought our communications director, one of our employees from the chronic disease prevention office, and myself. Mm-hmm. And depending on how the subjects start to develop for how we're going to do that and what kind of effort we're going to put towards the census, we'll start bringing in more staff mm-hmm. for that.
Well, we're already getting into interesting topic areas, but can I back out?
Yeah, it's unpredictable. Go down these rabbit holes.
No, I would just back out to say that in the beginning I introduced you and said that your victory over C. Mite was an upset. Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely. I think the odds makers in our town were being completely generous and reasonable when they thought that I might get within 5 or 6 points.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it isn't like we have
this is an opportunity to make a wager on this.
I had people, influential people in our community making wagers that they thought they were being very generous to me, giving me 6 points. But but then I won by 6 points, which is concerning.
What was upset? Right? What was upset? A political ideology of a certain stripe that represented by Steve White was upset by your political ideology. Is it that neat and clean? Can you describe what was upset? What was chosen in favor of what was already there?
There was a lot of personal debriefing happening after election week, trying to figure out what just happened. Right, and I think it is way more complicated than that. It wasn't really, there's no way to color everybody's motivations with one brush, really. I think what I encountered was just a lot of people thinking that change in general was probably good. That long-term entrenched interests were not necessarily serving our county the way people had hoped. Maybe not necessarily any particular objection with the individual Steve White, but just with that maybe there is such a thing as being on these commissions for too long and that refreshing people on them is at least worth a shot. Mm-hmm. Which is what I've encountered in the last year as well for, people continue to congratulate me and hope that I'm doing a good job but are paying attention to see if that change was worth it for them. And I'm trying to help them feel good about it. I don't know if that answered your question exactly. Is that what you were trying to get at? Is how do we feel like what happened in that election?
I'm certain, and I know a little bit of it, but I would rather have you speak for yourself. I'm certain that you had a message, right? I mean, my short time in politics, I sort of looked at the people who were in politics, and I could see them coming at it from a variety of different perspectives. One, they just wanted to be there. There are some people who run for elected office because they want to be where the decisions are made. They don't necessarily have a driving force behind them. The intention is to be there. They want to be a part. And so they're not necessarily ideologically strong, I would say. They're ideologically weak, and they're sort of like reputationally strong. They want to be there. They want to be a part of it.
Sure.
And then there are people who they want to redress a wrong. Right, something happened. They were mistreated by local government, and they wanted to come into it and correct it. And then there were some people who were sort of crusaders. They were motivated to make a change. And so I don't know where you fit in that, or if that's even an accurate descriptor of people's motivations. But that's some of what I've noticed in the past. And what was it that you were trying to bring forward, and it prevailed, whatever that was? I mean, we can't say that your victory was apart from your message, right?
No. Yeah, it's inseparable, right? I think that's a fair kind of path to be going down, talking about, you know, I guess to address that, trying to figure out which one of those proposed kind of categories I fit in that you just kind of laid out, you know, and I know you didn't mean that to be an exhaustive list of all the motivations that someone might do this for, but that allows me to kind of talk about it, I guess. I didn't have a particular bone to pick, so I don't feel that I really fit in that pocket necessarily. I had several things that I suspected could be done quite a bit better, but not one thing in particular. I didn't have any kind of wrong to redress or any bone to pick particularly. And I don't really want to be where all the decisions are being made. That's kind of the worst part of all this. It's kind of miserable because there's a ton of decisions that happen every day. I guess the ideological part of it, ethically and myself find it as a constant exercise to not have too strong of an ideological position to take on anything. I think that is part of what makes me the appropriate kind of person to do this. So I do have plenty of ideological stances on things, but I am careful to not let those block me in to making good decisions, right? Mm-hmm. So just knowing that about myself made me feel that I was the right kind of person. So I know that our town is full of people that would be great at doing this, but not enough of them go do it, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not the right person. I'm just the right kind of person because of the amount of negotiation that has to happen between people and the amount of kind of conflict resolution you end up doing. I just felt that these leadership positions were prone to falling over to the other side of being conflict creators and not so much conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm better at that, at maintaining my calm and reasonability and my empathy towards people.
I'm still not getting what I want.
Okay.
I'm not getting what I want.
What is it?
Here's what I want. Could you name 1, 2, 3, whatever the number is that you want, 1, 2, or 3 stark distinctions between yourself and Steve White? Stark distinctions between what he was bringing to the county and what you intend to bring and are bringing right now to the county.
I may not be able to come up with 3 great ones, but I know right off the top, we had a bit of an ideological difference in recognizing how much impact is likely to happen in the near future to our county. You know, there's a lot of denial. I believe that was a very unhealthy amount of denial in our county about what is actually likely to happen over the next few years and very quickly. And the response rate was not appropriate, I felt, to addressing the risk level, right? We were kind of sitting back as a county and saying, and these were the kinds of things that Steve rightly said at forums that we were at together, and he made good points that were true, but were kind of, I felt, misleading in their importance, was that, well, subdivision isn't happening out in the county. Right now, we're not having any major subdivisions out in the county. They're all happening in the city. And that's because we're a relatively unattractive place to subdivide if you're thinking of the county versus the city. The writing on the wall was that maybe was true last fall for one short period of time while there were no major subdivisions within the planning department under application, right? But nobody, I think, really believes that we're not just spreading subdivision out into the county. Mm-hmm. And we're doing it with a very soft hand, right? We have just kind of the bare minimum of complying with the state statute of and with our county growth policy that I've, you know, already kind of stated is pretty outdated. We're just kind of doing a very soft hand approach to property right allowances and what we think people can do with their property, which isn't wrong. I just didn't feel was the right way to address how serious things are getting.
So what would a more proactive process look like to come up with better planning and a better quality of life in Gallatin County?
So we are only as good as our guiding documents, because whenever we make a decision, we have to base it on some kind of primary criteria, right? It's in some kind of criteria that's based in at least law, something that we've put down in ordinance, something we've put down in a policy, something we've put down in law or following state law, or our interpretation also could be different. So just like any company, they're going to be kind of casting about if they don't have a good mission statement, right? And so our county growth policy is kind of our top-level mission statement, essentially. And that was way out of date, is way out of date, and doesn't really reflect people's values currently. A lot has changed in 15 years about what people value about their valley and their county. So we're doing that right now, going through a growth policy update, and we've placed a high level of importance in that process with public comment. We've spent the last several months trying to solicit as much comment as we could, doing online surveys and online comment periods and going out into the community and parades and fairs and festivals and just trying to get as much comment as we could. And it's starting to take shape to start to get an idea of what people's values are. And I think they do look a little different than they did 15 years ago the last time we did that. So that's a start. From that document, we pack in other documents underneath it, maybe a trails plan, a transportation plan. And these will help us get down to our actual planning policies that we use to make findings each time somebody comes before us with their own unique idea for what they want to do with their property or their business or their their land use, whatever that is. And
right. And
we're only as good as those documents guide us to be, or else we leave ourselves open to making decisions that are easily reversible in court. Right.
And Scott, are you still seeking more public input on that process?
We are. I think it's getting to the end. We've been doing it for several months now. I still think that the planning department still has a website up for envisiongallatin.com,
okay,
which is where they're doing taking survey information for what you want to see in the growth policy. Every meeting of the county is still an open meeting. The expectation is that people come give comment. Those comments are incorporated into the decision making.
Right.
One of the things that I'm hearing you say, although you did not use these words, but you can jump in whenever you want to, that I find very comforting is, for me, democracy works when the actions of representative officials reflect the wishes of those who vote them into place. And I keep hearing you reference that you believe the sort of, on the aggregate level, like, mindsets have shifted over the last 15 years in Gallatin County toward a more managed growth, toward a more influential position on the part of elected officials who are supposed to represent the best wishes of all, rather than the interests of those who are, you know, making their living off buying and selling properties or developing properties, et cetera, right? The special interest groups that dominate in many cases what's happening both at the city and the county level. So I'm very encouraged to hear that kind of sort of position taking, if I'm right.
Yeah, I think you are. And I think that is you're helping me be clear about what it is I'm trying to say here. That I do feel confident that that's the motivation that people were trying to send with sending me to the county commission. And I think a lot of that came from our outlying areas. I think there was a pretty clear message from the people at Four Corners and Gateway that they feel that growth that's impacting them has not been properly addressed and properly been taken a very deliberate approach to. It's been a very hands-off status quo kind of approach. So I think you're correct. I think I feel that's why I'm there anyway. That's the message I took from Election Day.
So, Scott, from your time as the facilities director with Belgrade Public Schools, what kind of insights did you get on what was going on in the county that influenced your, you know, decision to run and some of your interests in what you can do as part of the county commission?
Well, here's a really interesting dynamic that I evangelize about a lot for people. If people are concerned about the way the school districts and their challenges are going to affect our community at large, is that both the Belgrade and Bozeman school districts are not going to be building schools inside municipal boundaries ever again, because the school districts are growing faster than the municipal boundaries can. So we're going to be siting major schools out in unincorporated areas from now on, and we're going to probably build one a year for the foreseeable future.
Whoa. Stop. Stop right now. Because I've always been annoyed when I'm flying into Bozeman from somewhere and someone says that they live in Bozeman. And then I ask them a couple more questions about where they live. And it turns out they live like out on Thorpe Road, or they live in Gallatin Gateway, or they live somewhere near the Gallatin River. And I'm like, that's not Bozeman. Okay. I mean, Bozeman is a sloppy, silly, non-regular boundary, right? In itself. It's squirrely. It's all over the place. It reaches out in a defensive way, actually, reaching defensively to incorporate what would otherwise be a county subdivision. But for the most part, people think that everything is Bozeman. From the tip of the county down by West Yellowstone up to like Three Forks, they think the whole thing is Bozeman, and it ain't. Right, but the idea that you're citing schools in ex-urban locations and that schools, in fact, are the drivers of development is kind of horrifying, because school districts are independent political entities governed by their own political governors who are elected independently of city commissioners or county commissioners. And so basically you have these folks who have no formal training in planning, no sense of obligation to planning, no sense of coordination with the architects or planners who, except when they come in with their plans and then the trustees are asked to speak on them. And their default's always going to be like, well, it seems like you've crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's, good to go.
Right.
So that's frightening to me. How did you respond to your own role as a facilities manager, realizing that you were controlling the trajectory of growth?
Yeah, in Belgrade, we know there are limits to where the municipal boundary can even grow, right? Because they have no reason and no charge to annex land south of Cameron Bridge Road. There's no service they can provide out there that they're able to bring to people that won't be there by some private interest, right? The Four Corners Water Sewer District likely will eventually have right to be serving water and sewer to that land. But for right now, it's Utility Solutions. Barb Campbell owns the water that's south of Cameron Bridge. So Belgrade school or Belgrade municipal boundary will never have any reason to cross Cameron Bridge, but we know that thousands of people will live south of Cameron Bridge, right? So it behooves the interests of the school district to try and get their hands on property while they can.
But wait a second, let's just stop right there, because what you're saying is that the planning process in Gallatin County right now is such that people keep approving projects, and then the service providers who are sort of implicated in providing the services to this new extended area will say, we can't be expected to serve our national standards at this new location because you're just so far away from us that we can't guarantee we'll be there within 10, 15, 20 minutes or something like that, right? So service providers are coming in and testifying, we can't do it. So this is how planning is happening? People are basically saying, we can't do what you want us to do?
And you can see why this, as I was looking forward through just the next 6 years of what we needed to do just for Belgrade School District, and knowing that just right next door, Bozeman was having the exact same conversations, just at twice the rate, and that all of the, I was good friends with the facilities director at Belgrade too, and still am. Todd Swinehart has a huge charge to do to start siting schools and putting schools close enough to communities. Because we have, both school districts have a policy that we maintain community-sized schools, community-based schools, which means that you keep the elementary schools under 500 kids, and that 80% of the kids should be able to walk to that school or live within 1 mile, which mm-hmm. is what the transportation rules from the state are. If you live over a mile away, then the school has to provide transportation. Mm-hmm. You want to minimize that to the greatest extent possible, right? Have as many mm-hmm. kids walk to school as possible. So in that, you're making a decision about the size and the overlay area of what a school district is serving. So as soon as we have a few subdivisions and we start to have a couple hundred houses, we start thinking, well, there has to be a school there. We have an obligation to provide schooling to those people, and we have a community that says we want community-based schools. Well, that drives the location of schools wherever the houses are going, or wherever the water is, or wherever the services are that make it economical for developers to put houses in, right? So it's a little bit of chicken and egg. I have to look ahead to be able to buy property, or else it's not going to be available
right.
in the sizes and quantities mm-hmm. that a school district needs. You got to buy 10 acres for an elementary, 20 for a middle, 60 for a high school. You can't find 60-acre pieces anymore that are right. within the value of what a school district can raise for funds. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. grabbing a 60-acre chunk somewhere,
right.
better get those today or we're not going to have them anymore.
Right. So just to clarify for listeners, what you're saying is there's not really a proactive process for siting schools and integrating planning purposes such as having, you know, being within walking distance not only of a school, but grocery stores and other community assets that are going to result in, you know, the kind of development of neighborhood business clusters that people all say they want in the community, that's really just happening without a proactive process presently?
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, as an exercise, it's kind of difficult to imagine how you do it differently than we do it now. Because, like you mentioned earlier, Steve, that a school board is its own subdivision of state government, popularly elected by the people in their own school district. They have the ability to levy taxes, and they have the ability to run bond elections, raise their own funds, spend their own funds, completely independent of...
They're also immune from zoning.
Right. And which is what we do when they find a piece of property that they would like to put a school on. We see an application for a zone text amendment, and we change the zoning for that piece of property.
We say, thank you very much for coming in and letting us know what's happening
for public,
to our county.
Public lands and institution, PLI. We just did one of those out behind Wrestler on Talon Way a couple weeks ago. And that's where, you know, this Bozeman School District wants to put an elementary school. So we just designated as PLI. They designate some parkland around it and open space, and then we start building
it's
houses.
It's horrifying, really. Because I've been to the District 7 trustees meetings several times, and there are no planning-oriented people on that board. And that's a blanket statement, but I'm just saying. I don't trust them at all. This is more than just concerning. It sounds to me like what you're describing is chaos, and the only thing is that the mystification of language makes it seem like there's an orderly process to it, because you have to go about your job in an orderly fashion, but there is no order. There isn't, because there's you out there as the facilities manager. There's the speculator out there. There's the developer out there. There's the city council out there thinking about it. And then there's the school board. I mean, it's just it's like a war of all against all. And whatever happens to be the eventual outcome, we just accept.
Well, there are some... Without thinking very hard about it, you wouldn't see these things. But there are some limiting factors and some incentive structures that, as long as you identify them, can actually have some influence, right? So knowing that a school has to have a certain amount of traffic load and circulation and safety expectation, right? That means they have to be on a major corridor. They're not going to go on a subdivision road in the middle of nowhere. You know, they need to be on Amsterdam Road, or they need to be on Cameron Bridge Road, or they need to be on Valley Center, or they need to be on Circle F. So at least we know to a certain extent they're going to have to locate along major corridors, right?
Right. But if I may just interrupt for a second, that's also like strike one. Right? Because the idea that we're going to be dominated by highways and arterials in our planning is contrary to the kind of planning that we've been trying to do, or at least we were trying to do for some period of time, right? Like the notion that people should be connected from service area to service area by highways is like, it's long refuted,
super,
right?
It's super disappointing.
It's not the way to the future that we want, that your constituency has said that they want. So, like, highway planning as a determiner for school siting, already, like, strike one. That's my reaction, you know?
We can't pick the places for some of these things to go, but trying to identify the incentives that get them to be in reasonable areas that we can then develop around or develop ideas of community around are critical. It's the only real way that we're going to get these different subdivisions of government to kind of work towards the same goal. Mm-hmm. And I, going back a little bit, I think, yes, perhaps there aren't particular individuals on the school boards around here that have necessarily a background in planning. I don't either. But I think there is some cognizance and some awareness of the people on the school boards that they are having a huge effect on our community, and that they need to at least be thoughtful and not just... Right. Citing everything else. So, like, for Belgrade, this is a great example. Belgrade is just finishing up their growth policy. The city growth policy and parks plan is what the full title of it is. In that growth policy, they've identified that they want to keep schools within the city core. So that is also something that sounds like a great idea, but is also at odds for what... That's the city commission developing a planning document that puts them at direct odds with the school district. And so when we were reviewing that document as a commission, because we need to adopt it too, we had our period of input where we went through and said, you know, this doesn't really work with the way we do things, or, you know, we need language here in a different way so that we can actually use it, so it actually fits with our documents. And that was one of the questions that we brought up, was that I see here that you want to make sure all schools are in the city core, but are you addressing the fact that that means everybody has to drive into town to bring a kid to school? And is that, I know that that's in opposition for the goals and objectives of the school district. So have you ran this by the school district? And why? Why is it that you think all the schools should be in the core? And the response was, well, right, we know that that's what brings people into our town, and that's an economic driver. And if we didn't have the high school right in the middle of town, then nobody would come into town. And so there's this recognition that the school is a huge economic driver, and it's a huge circulator of people, and that, that has a lot to do with our community. And this reaction to want to hold it all in tight and have it be home, but that is not turn out to be a very operationally sensitive way to run a school district. We don't want kids that are coming all the way from Thorpe into the city center to go to school every day.
Just want to take a moment to remind everyone you are listening to The View From Here on KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM. I'm Jeff Milchin along with co-host Steve Kirchhoff, and today we're interviewing County Commissioner Scott McFarlane.
So where do we go from here?
Like, what do you do when the growth is basically smeared all across the landscape and there doesn't seem to be a lot of rhyme or reason? How do you bring rhyme or reason? How do you sort of reshape or provide a shape to what is right now kind of shapeless?
Well, that's the question I started this year with. And I've spent this year really trying to get my arms around what are the even possible answers to that question. What are the mechanisms out there with which we can actually affect an outcome of that we want, right? So how do we make sure the next Huffine lane that gets slapped down 5 lanes wide has some consideration to pedestrian facilities, right? And why didn't it back then? And so just trying to understand the way MDT views our valley and their job and their charge to provide infrastructure. How does the city's growth, and how do we prepare for the city's growth? You know, I was looking at that from both ends there. So, right, we feel like MDT happens to us, but we want to make sure that we're not just happening to the city of Bozeman too, right? I don't want to make decisions out in the county irrespective of what kind of problems those are going to cause or extra challenges that aren't necessary for the city to be able to grow. So just getting my arms around those things, like going to traffic coordination committee every quarter with the MDT guys and seeing, why do we have what we have today? How do we give you the foundations or the expectations, and how do we properly communicate the expectations as a county that we want X, Y, and Z every time you build a road? It's not that those things are impossible. It's just that they've not necessarily been used to their greatest extent up until now, right? We didn't have a transportation plan when they pulled Jackrabbit and Huffine through. So knowing that, right, that that's why we have what we have today, we think, okay, what's the next big infrastructure improvement? It's probably going to be from Four Corners south through the canyon, right, to Gateway. So knowing that there's going to be a lot of investment head that way from the state's perspective, we better have all our ducks in a row. And how do we do that? So that's what I spent the last year figuring out, how much efficacy do I actually have, and how many tools are there in the toolbox to be more deliberate and more predictive and get what we want out of the processes. So that's like, we're going to have a corridor study for Four Corners down to the entrance to the canyon. And anything we can get into that corridor study will be what informs MDT when they blow that road up someday, right? And so in there, we have to just be very firm that we expect pedestrian facilities. We expect multimodal transportation options. We expect there to be safe, you know, a higher level of safety and separated path systems. And that's just one consideration, right? That's just pedestrian consideration and safety and public health perspective, right? Mm-hmm. But then there's other things that maybe I'm not even thinking about that would influence MDTs happening to us and be more, have more efficacy in designing what happens to us, because some things we can't help. And so, also, again, going back to, I think it's just as important to recognize when we do that to other people. I don't want to have this malformed or underformed idea of of the things we're doing that are going to make things harder for people, or not to, to make things impossible, actually, later. Mm-hmm. Like now, if we tried to put a path along Huffine Lane, it's just nearly impossible because the right kinds of easements and right-of-ways aren't there. And now you have to get, you'd have to have so many different property owners help out with that project that it would have to be the only thing our community did for 2 years was just a campaign to get a path, right? Where if when they build the, when they built it, we could have done it all at once.
Right. The other thing to do is just take the middle section out of it.
Yeah, take the turning lane out. Yeah.
So, Scott, we've been talking a lot about kind of the planning and transportation, but you also mentioned at the beginning of the show that health services are a significant piece of what the county commission is involved in, or county services. What are some of the other things the county does that people may not be as familiar with? And how does that impact the lives of residents here in the Gallatin Valley?
Sometimes I don't know what it is that people don't know or do know that mm-hmm. we do, right? So, you know, I hope that everybody knows that the elections all go through our county, but maybe they don't. Maybe they don't understand that we manage the elections for the schools, for the cities, municipalities, for the county, and that our election office is amazing. Right. Maybe they don't know that, but that, you know, the county superintendent is a county function. He's an elected official. That our treasurer and auditor's office are, you know, people see those on the ballot. They know they're voting for treasurer, but probably don't understand everything the right. treasurer does. That, you know, that when you get your tax bill, that's coming from the county treasurer's office. And they're collecting the taxes and assessments for everybody that has a right to collect money in our state. So we are in our county. So they're the authority that collects all the assessments and taxes. So every bit of money people put in first comes through the treasurer's office and then gets distributed to municipalities, school districts, improvement districts, and whatever it is that we're collecting or assessing money for. I think that was something I went in underestimating how big of a undertaking that is. But that also means that every bit of discontent there is about taxes gets directed at the county, right? Because we send the tax bill. And so people say, well, my tax bill went up, and they're mad at the county because it came from the county that their tax bill went up, right?
Mm-hmm. So for that position, for example, the county treasurer, what discretion does the person in that position have that makes a difference? If you go to the ballot and you see a few different choices for county treasurer, How is that going to impact what happens in the county? Who holds that position?
Yeah, I tend to think that and a couple other positions are really they're apolitical positions. They're we do best when we elect people that have the skill sets and the actual professional background to do those, instead of just political people that want to again be where the decisions are being made. Mm-hmm. You know, there aren't very many decisions that Jennifer Blossom, our treasurer, is making in your taxes. She's not making any decisions about what you're paying in your taxes or how much you pay for your license plate. You know, she's responsible for the implementation and how hard that is, right? Getting everybody's license plates to them and making sure that we have a customer service oriented operation there, or making sure that our tax system is understandable and approachable and that people feel they can come and talk to us about it, and answering questions and being reasonable with people and being a guiding force. But she's not making any decisions that would be better for a politician to make, right?
So some of these elected positions right. are really in the nature of the work more like civil service positions than...
Right. It is. Some of them, it gets hard to explain why we elect some of these positions and why we don't hire on merit, right? Mm-hmm. But that's a Montana historical value, that we have an auditor and a sheriff and a clerk and recorder and a superintendent and a treasurer and commissioners, right?
So when it comes to the county health services, what are some of the specific things the county offers that people should be aware of that everyone may not be, Scott?
We have a pretty strong home visiting nurse program, which is something I don't think every county health department is out there doing. We do a lot of home visiting with nurses. We do a lot of immunization. We do, you know, a lot of the immunization record keeping for the school districts and for students going to school. We do a huge amount of immunization. And we do a lot of outreach and education about immunization as well. So,
sort of, you know, seasonal flu shots part of that program.
Yep. Yep.
And where do people find more information on that, since we're kind of at the beginning of the flu season here, maybe that's something people would be interested in seeking out.
Yeah, the county health department is in the clinic that is part of the health department is just on Mendenhall right behind the county courthouse building. I don't know what the address of it is, but it's 3rd Street, corner of 3rd and Mendenhall. And in there, they have that clinic, but then also have the environmental health office where you get your permits for wells and septics and drain fields. And then also in there is WIC, again, Women, Infants, and Children, and the Communicable Disease office and administration, a lot of other things in there too. But there's some customer service oriented offices in the health department that do that stuff. So you can imagine, you know, there's an office in there that hurts really bad when they hear people saying, you know, the anti-vax people, right? That hits our community, our county employees really hard because they do so much hard work trying to make sure that all the children in our community are healthy and that everybody's got their records and everybody's vaccinated and you know, an upstanding citizen in that regard. And so it's hurtful. A lot of, you know, the things going on in our community right now with miseducation and...
So I'm kind of in the dark on that. I mean, I know about the anti-vaxxers out there in terms of, you know, national social media and all that, but is there actually communications being directed at people within Gallatin County?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's pretty pervasive. We've got it in all our communities. We have an exemption in our state now, and I think federally, that if you have a religious exemption, you don't have to vaccinate your kids and you can send them to our schools. But then if there's an outbreak, the school does have the right to send unvaccinated kids home and quarantine them from school. So there are risks. You know, we've had outbreaks in our school districts over the last few years where kids that are unvaccinated have to stay home. And that can start to feel really unfair to the child, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was just trying to make a point about how much a lot of our offices that are outward looking really care about our community. You know, the sheriff's office, everybody knows that we have a county sheriff, I hope. But how large that office is and how many different things the sheriff's department is doing, sheriff's office is not a department. Sorry, Brian. there's so many things going on in there that I haven't even come up to speed on in the last year, right? There, we have victims services office and lots of different programs that the sheriff is motivating to happen. You know, we have great crisis intervention. The jail is a great jail. It's an unfortunate component of government, but for what it's worth, we have a great jail and the people that are there that are I can attest are very well taken care of. We have a great facility. We have trouble keeping people and good employees because it's not the most desirable place to work. Right. So we have probably it's one of the largest employment challenges we have in the county is keeping people at the jail as employees.
How many people does the county employ overall?
We generally say 550, 550 employees. And, you know, there's some are part time in there, some aren't full time. Mm-hmm. But that's which let's say compare that to Missoula. Missoula has 850 county employees. So I think we're third. We have about this close to about as many as Billings does and close to how many Missoula does.
And was just wondering if folks are interested in kind of staying abreast of what the county is doing, county commission and others, what's the best way to just kind of stay abreast of the news other than website? Are there social media channels and are there newsletters that people should know about?
There are. Great. Thanks for that, because I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that has been a big new initiative for the county this year to kind of recognize that component, right? So we hired a communications director, Whitney Burris, who came from the Chronicle. And she's had a great year of bringing us up to speed for what a modern operation should be doing for communication. She's got a Twitter going that keeps daily information about what's going on with different meetings at the county. We have a Facebook page. We have a new website opening this week, next week, and that's been huge for the county. The county has had this really old website for a long time. So we got a new IT director and a new communications director, and those two have really helped us get a good, nice website out.
So anyway, you said that, you know, law and justice is a big part of Gallatin County, and, you know, it's been a kind of a vexatious effort over the last
15 years or so to get a new Law and Justice Center done, first in coordination with the city of Bozeman, and then most recently independently of the city of Bozeman. What do you attribute those failures to? Passing the bond that would construct a new Law and Justice Center?
Right off the top, I think the most favorable thing I can say is that I think it was just a lot of misunderstanding in our community, which is certainly a large fault of our own, right? That helping people understand the difference between what they voted on 2 years ago, what they voted on last year, and what it was that was before them this year as far as law and justice. So just explaining to people that 2 years ago what you saw was a joint city-county law and justice center, right? And then what you saw last year, for people with ballots within the city anyway, saw the public safety center for the city, and that passed. And then to see a ballot again this year asking what feels like the same question, didn't we just do this? You know, that was a kind of a high bar to get over, to get to everybody that, no, these are different things. Because we're really dealing with a baseline understanding where we all get asked every day, like, what do you do? What is the county? What is the city? There's a lot of people that conflate those two things and think that the city and the county are the same thing, or that think that the city police department and the sheriff's office are the same thing. And people can be forgiven for thinking that, right? It's not important to their daily lives, really, to understand that that's a difference. But our county sheriff, he gets congratulated every day, he says, on, hey, congratulations on that new Law and Justice Center you're getting. He says, wait, that is not, that's for the city. I don't, you know, you're going to see on the ballot that our house, not the city's public safety house, right? So that was a big part. I think that we can excuse a big chunk of the failure of that ballot measure for just how hard it is for people to understand when we have competing ballot measures that happen year after year that seem like the same thing, and properly educating people about what the difference between, they have to have a desire on a fundamental level to understand just basic civics, which we just can't expect everybody to know. So minus that, I think that it's fair to say there certainly is a lot of, let's just say there was a lot of sentiment of voting no against the Law and Justice Center as a punishment. I know that we heard a lot of that. We got a lot of public comment, emails, phone calls. I talked to a lot of people that wanted to say no because they thought that that was an appropriate way to punish the county for their relationship with the city. In the absence of any other way to have any kind of effect on your government, I guess I understand that. I can totally understand that people, they don't have really any other way to say anything other than filling in that bubble. So it's an unfortunate way to exercise your feelings about that subject, but we haven't done great at really telling our story either about what our position
is. Do you think that's true? Do you think that people's ability to leverage or to influence their local elected officials is a bubble on a piece of paper?
Sometimes, right? Most people spend most of their year not even thinking about us, I'm sure. I think it would be the height of arrogance to think that people are thinking about me every day. I don't, they only think of me a couple times a year, maybe, or maybe a couple times a decade, right? So
so I know in the city of Bozeman, there are a sizable number of citizen advisory boards. Are there any similar structures at the county level for folks to collectively channel input to the county commissioners or other decision makers?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a lot of advisory boards. I wouldn't be able to list them all. There's so many. And we split up, the commissioners split up which ones they are on and which ones they attend and inform and stuff, because we can't be everywhere. But we have planning boards, public safety boards, like the 911 center. There's an advisory board for that. We have a weed board. There's so many different boards. We have parks boards, open land board. And then we participate in other boards all over the county as well. The county has, you know, a position on the Planning and Coordination Committee or the Traffic Coordination Committee or lots of other committees that we're cooperative, that aren't our boards, but we represent on. And then a lot of ours that are our own appointed boards, solid waste districts. I'm trying to think all that, you know, we make appointments almost every week, right? Because there's so many people.
And so does each county commissioner service kind of the citizen liaison on a certain number of those boards?
Yep. At the beginning of each year when we do our reorganization and we have our new chair seated, we go through all the boards and pick off which ones we want to be on, you know, whether we have an interest in, you know, we have the health board or the Custer-Gallatin Working Group Board or the Northern Rocky Economic Development Board, or, you know, there's outside boards, internal boards, all of them. We try to have one of us designated to each one of those. Great. So that we're paying attention. There are some that it is actually best for us to not be a part of because we don't want to be having any kind of ex parte communication, because later their recommendations will be coming to us and we have to make independent decisions. So, like, we can't be on the planning board.
Okay.
Because the decisions made at the planning board then go to the Planning and Zoning Commission, which we are. And then at that point, we should be hearing only the information brought at that point. We shouldn't have already predetermined our decision at the planning board. So we kind of stay away from a few of those that would make it kind of legally sticky, right? For the right reasons, I hope.
Do others come to mind where that's the case, where the commissioners would deliberately not be part of the volunteer process?
The planning one is the big one. Mm-hmm. That sticks out. And then adjustment boards. We don't participate in the adjustment board.
So let me just ask you some tougher questions. Like, if the Gallatin County Commission really wanted to control growth, my big question is, could they? And let me fill it in a little bit, because when I've had conversations with people, other of the county commissioners about this very subject, I say, can't you just say, we're only going to review one subdivision at a time. And if it has 10 phases, it has to cycle through all 10 phases. And then when that's done, we'll review the next subdivision. No, we can't do that. We're blocked by state statute. Oh, okay. Well, can you hold them all? Can you hold their feet to the fire that their new subdivision has to prove that it's not only not degrading the environment, but it's actually leaving it whole, if not improving it? And if they can't prove that with an independent EIS, then they're not good to go. That would be another way to, like, control the amount of growth that we get a year. Or could you, I had some other ideas here, as another way of stopping the kind of growth that I know that you are not in favor of, the luxury development growth, could you not impose a luxury tax on second, third, fourth homes, for example? Could you not impose on the part of the county commission over all the lands that you govern? Could you not impose an inclusionary zoning ordinance that would require a certain percentage of all new units in every new subdivision to serve people at 40 and 60 and 80% of median incomes, right? I mean, I've run these up the flagpole, and they've all been shot down by other people who occupy your position on the county commission. You can't do that, Steve. You can't do that. State won't let you do that. We can't do that. Our hands are tied. I'm sorry. I see where you're coming from, but you can't do that. Is that true? Those ideas that I just came up with, are those all shot down? Are those all just, like, not allowed by state law?
I don't know how to make you feel any better about all those things. And I've heard you say those things before, and I've read some of the things you've wrote, right? So I've been thinking about this for the last couple of weeks, and I am certainly at risk of being kind of inaccurate if I talk too granularly about all of the rules, because I don't even understand them all yet, right? I'm trying to, like I said earlier, I'm trying to get my arms around what are all the things we can do, what are the tools we're allowed to use. But, you know, it is simple to say imposing luxury taxes on homes, right? I don't think that we have any latitude to do property tax. The state does property tax. I don't know, but I don't know what statute it is that prohibits, or if it's, let's say this. When I start to get down the rabbit holes of some of these things that are given assumptions, I find that some of them aren't as solid as people have always led them to be. We find out that there are maybe ways you could do this. Let's say, for instance, impact fees, right? That's something that constantly comes up, and depending on the current political interpretation, we say, well, we can't do impact fees. Well, I don't think that's completely accurate, right? It was a convenient thing to say as a blanket statement. We can't do impact fees. But there are ways that we could do what people would think.
Wait, I thought the county did have impact fees. They're just at a lower rate than, say, Bozeman's.
We don't have any impact fees.
No. Not for streets, not for sewer, not for sure.
Not like a by unit development kind of impact fee that people expect you would have for a subdivision.
You have exemptions, right? You have to pay X amount for the roads. You have to pay X amount.
Yeah,
right?
We
but
can.
It's a lump sum.
Behold you to, you know, paying your share of impact for the road system,
right?
Or your proportionate impact,
right?
Which is an impact fee, I guess. But we don't look at that essentially as a per unit cost, right, the way that maybe a school district would say, right? Out in the county, we have voluntary impact fees for the school district, which I don't understand how you can have voluntary impact fees and have them actually work. But the rural schools collect money from people that do subdivisions within their school districts as a voluntary basis. And a lot of developers do that, are generous enough to do the few dollars per lot that it is, a few thousand bucks that they pay to the school. That's just an example, right? I started looking into what do we mean when we say we can't do impact fees, and go back and look at when this was reviewed previously and what kinds of decisions were made, what the resolution looked like, or what the refusal to look into that looked like. Why do we say that we can't do that? And it doesn't, none of these things are usually as simple as they sound. Oh, well, the state does that, we can't do that. It's not, I'm finding everything's just a little gray, but that doesn't, right, it's not a very helpful answer. I'm sorry. I think so far what I found that the most effect that we can expect to have is to have stronger subdivision policies, have a more deliberate outlining of what we expect, maybe not towards the reason of trying to disincentivize people from subdividing, but make them actually provide the things we expect and call people out. Also, we do have the political ability to kind of call out when we see things that we don't like, even if they're not illegal or they're, we have to let them happen. It's still within the realm of expectation of the kind of political sphere for us to say, mm-hmm, even though they can do that, I really do not like that you're doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, what we had out in Four Corners was what I feel is a kind of evasion of major subdivision out there. They did it in a legal fashion, but it's still not right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Maybe that doesn't go very far, but it is what I've got, right?
So, Scott, we, in the minute or so we have left, was wondering if you'd just like to give folks an idea of what your vision for the near future in the county is. Anything that you aspire to see the commission improve or do that might be new, or just give folks a clear idea of kind of your vision.
I think that we're going to ring in the new year with renewed energy and optimism for getting back together with the city. I think that's something everybody wants to hear. That's something I want to hear. And we have no reason to not get back at that. So we have an opportunity. I think we're going to take it. We're all in agreement about that. We're going to get back together and start doing joint city-county commission meetings again. And there are some other things that are going to be happening that I'll let other commissioners give their own press briefings about that are not really my business to be debuting today, mm-hmm, necessarily. That's a huge thing, right? I think that almost every conversation about the county and city socially in our neighborhoods and in our communities kind of underlie this understanding that this isn't going very well between the city and county and that it could be done better. So that's a big thing for next year that I'm looking forward to. I don't carry any baggage. I didn't bring any baggage about this, so I was ready to just dive right in on it. 1 year is pretty fast, I guess. We also will be culminating a lot of our planning documents in this last year, like I led off saying. A lot of the things that are going to guide growth in the next year are going to be wrapped up this next year. Growth policy, starting trails plan, census is going to be huge. We're really looking forward to the way that the census is going to start to change the way that we're managing and the things that we're required to do. Mm-hmm. Right? Being a metropolitan planning organization is, we still don't have our arms around what that even means, but it's exciting. It means that we really have to address transportation at a higher level, which is exciting to me. And then another, you know, we just finished one budget year and we'll start the next one right away. So a lot of the things that happen in your community are done through that budget process. So pay more attention to the budget, mm-hmm, process, I would
say. I can see by your body language, but I can't expect our listeners to see it, that it's a, yeah, lot.
Right? It is.
It weighs on you, in not in a bad way. It weighs on you because you take it seriously and you're trying your level best to do what you can for the citizens that count.
I am. People have been asking me all year, hey, how do you like the new job? And I'm trying to be honest and say it kind of really sucks. But it is what I thought it would be. It's what I thought it would be. There's been no surprises. I still think I'm the right person for it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to keep working. But to say it's like fun, yeah, it's not. It's rewarding, but not enjoyable.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be fun. But anyway, I just wish you all the success in the world in getting the horses back in the barn, bringing some amount of growth management that we can all sort of live with more comfortably than what's been happening over the last 25 years in this county. But thank you for the work that you're doing on the part of all of us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for putting us together. Scott.
Yeah.
You've been listening to The View from Here on KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM.